Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 236 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping right back into it. Fight reviews this past Friday, the 16th of June, from the York Hall in London on Sky Sports. Frazier Clark remains undefeated with the decision over Maurice Wack. Is it Wack? Did I say that right?
Yeah, Maurice Wack.
Wack, I knew I said it, who takes the 10th loss. He's now in double digits of his professional career. What'd you think about Frazier Clark's win?
Wasn't the greatest performance. I know, obviously, that they turned down the Fabio Wardley fight because Ben Shalom said he needed rounds. He wanted him to do, you know, a 10-rounder before he fought Fabio Wardley for the British title. And after that performance, you can kind of see why, I guess. Unless Frazier Clark just decided to do the full 10 just to see cardio-wise that he could do it, because it wasn't the greatest performance for somebody with that amount of amateur pedigree that he's had. You know, you can see he's definitely not taken to the pros the same way Joe Joyce did. You know, Joe Joyce came into the pros on a tear, really, you know, fighting, you know, good people from his, you know, from the debut. And then, you know, not long after that, he was fighting, you know, Bermaine Stiverne and people like that. So, yeah, definitely slow start for Frazier Clark. And it's not doing him any good because, you know, a lot of the pundits, a lot of the fans, everybody's kind of just calling him out for this slow start that he's taken. And he really needs to put his foot to the metal because he turned pro, you know, pretty late as well. He's already into his 30s. So I definitely needs to get his foot down, a few better performances. And I don't think it's looking too great if he does take the Fabio Wardley fight next either.
Do we know why? Do you know a reason why he turned down the Wardley fight?
Well, I don't think it was him. I think it was more Ben Shalom. I think it was two reasons. They wanted him to have a 10-rounder beforehand just to make sure, I think cardio-wise and experience-wise, that he was good enough for that. And then I also think that there was kind of like a disagreement. I think Ben Shalom, because they've invested all that money in Frazier Clark, he wanted it on Sky, and Eddie Hearn and Fabio Wardley obviously wanted it on DAZN because of their investment in Fabio Wardley. So only time will tell, I guess, on where it ends up if we get it.
That's always a key word in the fighting game, right? Especially in boxing. Moving on to this past Saturday, the 17th of June, from the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, on DAZN, Regis Progre in his re-debut, because didn't he fight on DAZN before? So it's kind of like a re-debut on the DAZN and the Matchroom team on his new deal with Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn. Regis Progre, 29-1, gets the split decision win. I guess to a lot of people, a surprising split decision win over Danielito Zorrilla, who takes the second loss of his career. Progre got the decision by scores of 117-110, 118-109, and 114-113. Progre retains his WBC super lightweight title. Okay, so for somebody who didn't watch this fight, we caught it, but for somebody who didn't watch this fight, you got three different scores here. two of them are close, 117-110, 118-109, but then you have 114-113. What kind of fight? How would you describe the fight that was on TV by just reading those scorecards?
It'd be hard, wouldn't it? It would be hard to describe that when you've got a 118-109 to Progre, which is, okay, this was kind of one-sided, and then a 114-113 in favor of Zorrilla. So, yeah, it's kind of, you know, very very strange scorecards right there when you look at it like that. I watched the fight, but I kind of just sat back and enjoyed it. I didn't really do an official scorecard on a piece of paper like normal. I thought it was close, and looking at Twitter at the time, there was a majority of people that had Zorrilla winning. And I don't know, maybe sometimes when you're watching a fight and it's close, you then kind of just go for the underdog because everyone likes that underdog story. So maybe people were just scoring some close rounds to Zorrilla because of the fact it was so close. Yeah, the scorecards were atrocious, but it was a super close fight, and I honestly thought Zaria maybe took it. He stunk the place out, but he did it enough to, I think, you know, win the fight. You know, and before it, I thought Regis Progre was going to kind of really blow Zaria away. I saw Zaria fight Ana Barboza. He did come about this fight in a completely different way. He was just boxing and moving, never letting kind of Regis Progre get set. Regis Progre looked like he was kind of all night just looking for that one big shot. And somebody with his experience, he struggled to really get Zaria into a corner and kind of like, you know, cut him off at points when he was kind of dancing around the ring, which I thought was kind of strange because, you know, he had a really good fight with someone that we both rate, you know, in Jose Zepeda. And he made kind of easy work of Zepeda. And, you know, me and you both rate Zepeda. He's one of the best fighters in the division. And I would have thought he's a better fighter than Zaria. So I don't know whether it's because maybe a late change of opponent because of Liam Paro getting injured. And then it looked like it was going to be Barboza. Barboza couldn't strike a deal with Progre's team, essentially. And then it ended up being Zaria that came in with a completely different style. And maybe just a bad weight cut for Progre because him and Josh Taylor in the last couple of weeks, both of them have been light years away from the performances that we're kind of used to, I guess. So maybe it's just people getting too big for the weight categories. But he got the W, and on to hopefully a bigger and better fight with someone like Jack Catterall, Devin Haney, someone like that.
And he did, wasn't Bill Haney at the fight? And then didn't he FaceTime him on a video chat, Progre and his son, Devin Haney, like after the fight? I think they were like at a restaurant or something. So, you know, they were, let's see if it happens. Anyway, that happens all the time, especially with the younger fighters and stuff. But I mean, we'll see where that goes. But in a way, you know, like you said, I think a lot of people expected Progre to just dominate. And it could have been just a change in opponents. You know, it was supposed to be Liam Paro, who was the original opponent, and he had to come out. And then Barboza was kind of in the mix, but I don't think that obviously didn't happen. And Zaria kind of was thrown in there. So it could have just been like, oh, you know, who are we training for? You know, sometimes it's just different styles. But in a way, don't you think the silver lining is that because Progre, I guess, won in a split decision, that the other fighters at 140 now might look at him like, oh, he's kind of regressing. Maybe this fight is worth it to try to get that WBC championship. Because to a lot of fighters, the WBC championship world title is the belt that they want. And right now, Progre has it. So, and Progre over his career has, I think it's been known that he's had a difficult time in getting these bigger names in the ring with him. You know, maybe it's also had to do with promotional affiliations. You know, he was with Pro Bellum and all that stuff. And then all the situations that happened with them. And then, you know, his alleged associations and all that stuff. But I mean, maybe he'll get these other 140 guys in the ring with him now, right?
Hopefully, because, you know, on his day, Regis Progre is one of the best fighters in that division. So if a bad performance like that ends up getting like a Haney, a Teofimo Lopez, and any of
Jose
those
guys, Ramirez.
Yeah, if that gets any of those guys in the ring with him, then hell yeah, I'm all for it. I heard the rumor today that they were saying that Bob Arum's come out saying that they're in talks to make Devin Haney Lomachenko too.
Oh yeah, are you really surprised about that? Of course that's not surprising at all. They're going to offer Haney such a significant amount of money in terms of the increase from the first fight for him to take it, because that's the only way he's going to take it, is if they offer him such a significant purse. Because other than that, he's going to be like, well, no, I already beat him. And it was a tough fight. So he's going to want to be compensated just like any fighter would, because right now, I think supposedly he says he's a free agent. Him and his dad say the free agent. So yeah, I think Bob Arum can throw it out there in the universe, but you know, you're going to have to add some dollar signs to that offer. So, because Haney has a lot of leverage right now. He really does. Moving on, also on that card in New Orleans, Louisiana, Chakram Giyasov remains undefeated as well. at 14-0 with a unanimous decision win over 12 rounds over Harold Calderon, who takes the first professional loss of his career. And then also on the card, in an upset to a lot of people, Julissa Alejandra Guzman gets the 8th round knockout over Ramla Ali, who takes the first professional loss of her career. This is for the IBF Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. So, that, you know, this was a, at least to the hardcore boxing fan base, this was a big upset. What do you think?
I was never a fan. I think I said it on the pardon me, on the show before. It seems like she was kind of like a Maricela Corneo. She just uses boxing to try to get a foothold into something else, in my opinion, because she was always, I'm the first boxer to do this, I'm the first boxer to do that. You know, it seemed like she was more of that, like an activist, a model, everything else. In my opinion, yeah, I never really rated her. I didn't think she was going to be a world champion, even with how weak the women's division is, to be honest with you. So good performance from Guzman, and it was good to see a knockout in women's boxing, to be honest with you. So
we don't see too many of them.
No, you don't. So when you actually got a knockout in it, I was kind of like, you know what, that's what it needs, you know, because she, I think it was a round before where Guzman actually rocked her, and I was kind of like, okay, like jump on her, you know, let's get a knockout for once. This is what we need in the sport. Didn't get it that round. Next round, she comes out and just catches with an absolutely beautiful left hook. And that was all that she wrote for Ramla Ali. Great performance from Guzman. And love to see more of her. Heavy-handed female fighter. Jumped straight to the top of one of my favorite female fighters.
All that she wrote. And also this past weekend from the Gold Coast Convention Center in Australia on Showtime here in the United States, Tim Zhu remains undefeated as well at 23-0 with the quick first round knockout over Carlos Ocampo, who takes the third professional loss of his career. Tim, and this was for the WBO interim super welterweight title. I was surprised that this ended in the first round because Ocampo's been in there with Spence, and you know, he's had some pretty good fights, you know, opponents that he's been in the ring with. And Tim Zhu just, you know, I was really surprised. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, regular listeners to the show, you know, I'm not completely sold on Tim Zhu so far. You know, the Tony Harrison one surprised me. This surprised me as well. So I'm not fully on the train. I've got one leg.
But you're getting there.
I'm getting there. I've got one leg on the train so far because, yeah, he's proving me wrong so far. You know, I thought a lot of people had just kind of jumped on him because of the, you know, his name, you know, his father's name. His father is obviously a legend in the boxing world. So, but yeah, slowly but surely, he's starting to show us what we what people are saying. And then I think he's probably hoping that Charlo maybe relinquishes the belts and moves up, something like that, because he's positioned himself now for the, you know, as a mandatory for the WBO. And I don't know if he would be good enough to beat Charlo, but Charlo could move up, you know, could move up, and all of those belts get relinquished, and he's in there with, you know, somebody else for the world title, which is probably what he's hoping for, I guess, or maybe what the division's hoping for, because they've all been waiting for Charlo to do something.
Right. Yeah, you never know. You never know. I mean, do you think that Charlo, probably not, but because Australia obviously doesn't get as many fights, but when they have a fighter who's popular, obviously, like Tim Zhu, you got George Kambosos when he had the titles and all that stuff. There's some good money to be made down there. What do you think is a percentage chance that Charlo would go down? I don't think he is, obviously, but what do you think is a percentage chance that Charlo would go down to Australia, like, to fight? Like, because there is money down there.
I think he would be similar to, like, a Devin Haney. I think he's one of those champions that, like, if you offer him enough money, he will go. Same as like you said about Haney. I'm sure he'd fight Lomachenko if they offered him enough money. And he's a favorite. I would say he's a favorite. I don't think he looks at Tim Zhu as if to say like, shit, he seems a bit tricky. He's kind of like heavy-handed, but you know, Charlo's legit, right? You know,
Charlo is legit, but Tim Zhu's been consistently active and the Charlo brothers haven't.
I mean, I had to give him credit for beating Tony Harrison because Tony Harrison is a box of tricks.
No, yeah, right. But they should fight a third time because Harrison beat him the first time, Charlo beat him the second time. Why not do a rubber match eventually, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, we need him back in at least, right? I think he has to come back, especially with the time off he's had. I would say at least he deserves a little warm-up fight, a little gimme, right? And then stick him in with Tim Zhu towards the end of the year, beginning of 2024. But, you know, we need him back. He's great to watch. And I think Charlo's just another one's kind of the same as Tim Zhu. You know, he's had the belts. But even at the time, I think me and you both even said it. You know, we needed that name. We needed that resume win, right? And eventually he got it against, Harrison. And wasn't it, he faced Derry Vachenko, right?
Yeah.
Two great wins.
Yeah, Derevchenko, like we talked about last week with after the Munguia fight, that guy can fight. But yeah, Tim Zhu, he's continuing that hype. It's happening. So, you know, and I'm sure Showtime and PBC are liking it. So we'll see how he turns out. But I think by the end of the year, hopefully we see a Charlo fight. That'd be great. Moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 24th of June, from the Ota City General Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan, Joshua Franco, Riverside, well, he's from actually Texas, but he trains in Riverside, California. Joshua Franco, the WBA super flyweight champion of the world, 18-1-3, goes up against Kazuto Aoka, 29-2-1. I like this fight. I think, I give it to Franco for going to Japan. You know, Japan obviously has a loyal fan base over there. They love their boxing. I wish we'd be able. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know if it'll be on TV over here in the States or not. I'm sure maybe somewhere. But I got to give it to Franco, especially being the champion. He's going to Japan to defend it, right?
Yeah, it's a rematch of the one from New Year's Eve where right. It was a majority draw. So 6 months. They've managed to turn it around. And then if people can remember, going back, this is Joshua Franco's lineup, his resume since 2018. Oscar Negrete again, Jose Burgos, Andrew Maloney again, Kazuka Aoka. What a crazy resume. How many rematches and trilogies has he had in such a young age?
That's true. Yeah, but that means that he's in exciting fights, because why would you run back? It's just like anything in boxing. Why would you make a rematch? Generally, you don't make rematches unless like the first fight were exciting, you know, like there was entertainment and, you know, there was like, hey, I don't know who really won those fights. Like, you know, let's run it back. Let's see who's really the guy. So in a way, it kind of the silver lining for Joshua Franco is that he puts in the work and he's exciting, you know.
No, yeah, 100%. Like you said, 100%.
Who do you think gets this fight in the rematch?
I'm going to go with the same pick that I picked the first time. I think Aoka.
It's a good fight, man. It's a good fight.
It is. You know, you got Joshua Franco, probably throws more punches, very accurate, good at building up a game plan and kind of sticking to it, very methodical. Aoka, I think, is a little bit more heavy-handed. He's definitely got the higher KO ratio, I think around 50%. Yeah, 29 wins, 15 KOs. I think Aoka may just finish him towards the end of the fight with a body shot or something like that and just kind of takes him out. But it should be a great fight, and hopefully it pops up on either DAZN or ESPN Plus or something like that. Hopefully someone purchases it so we can get some early morning boxing.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that fight. And I it went over my head that they had their first fight earlier this year. So, yeah, this is... I wonder how long Franco and Robert Garcia have been over there. You know, because you obviously have to get acclimated to the time change. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not sure Robert's been around, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Been around boxing as a fighter and as a coach and traveled all over the world. So I'm sure that he probably got in there in at least a few days, if not a week before, just to get acclimatized to the climate and also, you know, the time zone.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also this upcoming weekend from the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Showtime, Carlos Adames, 22-1, goes up against Julian Williams, 28-3-1 for the WBC interim middleweight championship of the world. Julian Williams has obviously been in there for with a lot of big names from 154 to 160, and Adames is obviously the A side here. Who do you like in this fight?
See, this is a tricky one because I used to really like Julian Williams, but I think he's gone off the boil a little bit. I think I'm going to go Adames. I think Julian Williams, just with like, the change of coach over the years, stuff like that, maybe just taking the eye off the ball a little bit, whereas Carlos Adames has kind of hit a little bit of a hot streak. Sorry. I think him. I think it's going to be one of those fights where it kind of starts off very slowly. We kind of warm into it. And towards the end of the fight, I think we'll get maybe a little bit of a firefight. And I think Carlos Adames catches him, you know, late on.
I like Adames too. I think, I mean, I don't want to count Julian Williams but Julian Williams is just like one of those, especially the last several fights, he's been one of those hot and cold fighters where sometimes when you see him and when he wins, it's just like, oh, wow, like he's something. He's got something going here. And then a fight or two later, it's like, oh, what happened to that guy two fights ago who was in that fight with, you know, like when he fought, who was it?
Rosario?
Yeah, Rosario. So I don't know. I'm how old is Williams? Do we know?
33.
And Adames is what?
Adames is 29.
Okay, so they're right there. They're close to each other.
To me, though, it's just if you look at 2020, TKO lost to Rosario. 2021, split decision loss to Vladimir Hernandez. 2022, an 8-round decision over someone who was 18-11. This is Julian Williams.
Damn.
And then he goes into a world title fight. Like, how is he even ranked?
Well, you know how it is. We need to stop asking that question on this show because we know how the politics work and how the system is gamed behind the scenes.
That's true.
I mean, it's just like anything. Like when a fighter takes a loss, they'll go to Mexico to fight. Like in the span of like 4 or 5 months, they'll go there like once a month to get their record back up and to get wins. Like, oh, I'm 5-0 in my last 5 fights since my loss or something like that. You guys just haven't watched my fights. And that way it's, you know, in terms of the rankings to be able to sell it. I mean, that's what happens, right? You know, we shouldn't be too surprised about it, but I think I'm going, I don't know, man. I think I'm going to go J-Rock. I'm going to go Julian Williams on this one. I still think he might have, like I said, he's so hot and cold. I think he might have something there. And also, Mike Rodriguez, Cutman, crime fighting Cutman, I believe is also his Cutman, where he has been for a while. So I don't know why that wouldn't change unless it has changed for this fight. But maybe because of that too. Mike Rodriguez is a friend of the show. He's been on a couple times. I'm going for his guy, man. I'm going for his guy. So, but I think Adames is dangerous. So we'll see how that goes. Also on the card, Fernando Daniel Martinez, 15-0, undefeated. Goes up against Jade Bornea, 18-0. There's a battle of undefeated fighters for the IBF Super Flyweight title. So this is a Super Flyweight championship fight we just had in our interview of the week. It's not on this episode, it's on a bonus episode. So after this episode, if you're listening to this episode, go listen to a bonus edition we also have released with flyweight Christian Robles, who fights this Saturday on the DAZN card, the Matchroom USA card, against Yankiel. What's the last name? Yankiel Rivera Figueroa. This Saturday, June 24th, at the Madison Square Garden Theater in New York City. Battle undefeated right here. Martinez versus Bornea. What do you think? 15-0 against 18-0.
Could be the fight of the night on this card.
Could be.
This
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Fernando Daniel Martinez. Great fighter to watch. Jade Bornea, same sort of thing. Both similar ages, 31 and 28. Should be a great, great fight. I think I'm going to go Martinez. I think he's just heavy-handed, great fighter. Kind of came out of nowhere to some people. You know, fighting out of Argentina, they always seem to have that real, real grit to put in, like a really big shift. and beating somebody like Jerwin Ancajas twice.
Yep, twice.
That just shows you, right? That just shows you how good he is. So I stick my money on Martinez.
I think I'm with you. I think I'm with you in terms of sticking with Martinez. Yeah, I think you're right. This could be the fight of the night. It has a really good chance to be the fight of the night. So it's a pretty good card. It's a pretty good card. Like I said, also on the card, Erickson Lubin, 24-2, goes up against Luis Arias, 20-3-1. This is also a pretty decent matchup as well, right?
I don't know whether it's too harsh to say kind of like a gatekeeper type of status, kind of.
Well, Lubin, I don't even think Lubin's 30 yet, is he?
That's a good question. He's been around for a while. I think we always say, you know, he's his age isn't on BoxRec.
I remember when he fought Charlo in LA at the Galen Center at USC, the University of Southern California. He was, I think, 23 or something, and then Charlo knocked him out, but he was young. He was young, and I remember being there, and I was even leading up to that fight. I was like, I don't know if he's ready, man. I don't know if he's ready for somebody like Charlo. And, you know, I mean, he was in there, but he got knocked out. But ever since then, he's, you know, regained his successful path and really recovered from the loss. So
remember the life or death fight with Fundora?
Yeah, yeah. That was a great fight, too. That was a great fight, too. I mean, Lubin, for not, you know, for being so young, and like I said, I don't even think he's 30 yet. He's been in some wars, man, and he's been in there with some really great fighters. So, you know, and that was a good fight too. That was right here at the Dignity Health StubHub Center in Carson, California, in the Los Angeles area, at the War Grounds. So, yeah, Lubin, I like Lubin in this fight. You know, I think Lubin is just, but Arias has also been in there with some really good fighters too. Like you said, I don't want to call it a gatekeeper, but I could see how you say that. I could see it.
Your smart money goes on Erickson Lubin, but right. Luis Arias is so crazy in terms of he'll lose to fighters that he should really beat, and then he had that crazy win over Jarrett Hurd, and then he went and lost to Vaughn Alexander, who is a legitimate pretty much gatekeeper / journeyman. So, yeah, he's a little bit hot and cold. Like, it must just depend on how camp's been, how the weight cut's been. And then sometimes he just feels himself and he puts on some great, great performances. And then other times, like losing to people like Luke Keeler, Vaughn Alexander. Yeah, so your smart money, in my opinion, goes on Lubin. If Luis Arias is at crazy odds, maybe sneak a little bit of money on there just to back it up.
Yeah, there's no hurt in doing a double bet there. Also, this upcoming weekend from the theater at Madison Square Garden in New York City on DAZN, as I mentioned, our interview of the week, it's a separate bonus show with Christian Robles, who fights on this card, a flyweight, against Yankiel Rivera Figueroa. Sorry, I know he had like two last names. That's why I had to look. So headlined by Edgar Berlanga, his debut. After his contract, I don't want to say ended, or did it end? He just didn't re-sign with Top Rank. But this is his debut under the DAZN and Matchroom Eddie Hearn banner as he goes up against, and I'm assuming he's still with Golden Boy, right? Golden Boy Promotions, Jason Quigley, right? Do we know that?
I think he's with Golden Boy. Yeah, I think he still is with Golden Boy.
Right? I mean, I think so. I honestly think this is a pretty good matchup. Quigley has a good enough experience, I think, to be in there with Berlanga. I kind of feel like that's an insult to Quigley, because we've kind of seen Berlanga, you know, I think Quigley has a shot here. I think he does. What do you think?
I think he could outbox him, because we've seen Berlanga get outboxed before.
Right.
You know, he's always managed to find a way to either sneak a very close decision or suspect decision, or he's always managed to, you know, take them out. I think if Quigley decides just pretty much do what Zaria did against Regis Progre. Literally just stink it out, have the crowd booing, essentially, because it's a boring fight. He's got to take those boos as cheers because he can't get caught in a firefight with someone like Belanger because he's shown so far that he has power and he can take you out. And that's what Belanger's going to try to do. I think that's his only way to win because so far we've seen that he's not that good at the basics of boxing. So I think he's just going to try to do it on his home turf, trying to please the fans. I'm sure he'll just be looking all night for that one big shot. And I think, unfortunately for me, I think Quigley just doesn't have the power to keep him off. And I think at times a lot of boxers just get drawn into a fight. For example, Amir Khan. And I think that'll be the time he gets caught. I think Belanger just has to be patient. Very, very patient. Just know sooner or later he's going to catch him. And I think, unfortunately, he will. And I think he'll take Quigley out late on.
No, you think so? You think he'll get knocked out? I mean, obviously, Berlanga, that's been his calling card. That was his big thing over there on ESPN at Top Rank, is consecutive knockouts until it wasn't. But I mean, Quigley's been in there. I mean, he lost to Andrade, right? Didn't he fight Andrade and he lost, right?
Yeah, Quigley, yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think because Quigley's been around for a while, and then, you know, he's been in there with somebody like Andrade, who's a world champion right now, and, you know, I think he has a really good shot here. I think he does, like you said. Quigley can box. He's the better boxer. So, and Berlanga has shown difficulty in fighting boxers. So I think that Quigley has a shot here, man. I like this matchup. So, but I mean, I'm obviously, Matchroom is hoping Berlanga gets the win, so they can make some money off of him and have him, you know, make some money with him in actuality. And then also, you know, eventually position Berlanga to get a Canelo payday. You know, imagine a Berlanga Canelo fight in New York City. You know, if Berlanga can keep winning and actually level up and fight some of the bigger names, you know, maybe in five fights or something, a Canelo matchup. Obviously, he wants that matchup. Anybody wants that matchup. It's a huge life-changing money. But I'm sure DAZN and Matchroom, that's a goal right there. That's probably the goal, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, obviously, you know, that's what Matchroom are trying to do. You know, they're looking for opponents that'll sell tickets. And if Belanger can keep winning and hopefully keep, you know, knocking people out, eventually you'll get that big Mexico-Puerto Rican rivalry at some point next year. What do you think about the fact that Top Rank, I think we've always said, are one of the best at kind of, you know, taking a prospect and breeding them all the way through to the top? What do you think that they were okay to let Belanger go? They don't really miss. And the fact that Top Rank were okay to let Belanger go, do you think they saw something in him which he wasn't going to get him over the line?
Yeah, I think that came into play in their decision. But I think it's also like Berlanga has every fighter has an ego, but Berlanga has a bigger ego than a lot of other fighters. And then the consecutive knockouts, you know, he was really into it. You know, that really, and him coming out with that rapper Fat Joe, you know, he was getting a lot of attention, a lot of hype. He was on ESPN. And I think I think in a way, just like any promoter should, Top Rank realized that they needed to, you know, level him up. Like, okay, let's put you in a fight here. Or I mean, what, I'm trying to remember, because I know we talked about it on the show during that timeline, but did we have reports or anything like that? That was it, that Top Rank wanted to put Berlanga in, you know, bigger fights with better competition, you know, kind of like, okay, let's move you up a level. You know, now we're getting there. And maybe Berlanga and his team wasn't ready, or they were pushing back against that, or was it vice versa, where Berlanga wanted to level up and Top Rank felt he wasn't ready? Allegedly.
I think it was vice versa. If I remember rightly, I might be remembering it correctly. I think it was the other way around. I think Belanga wanted the big fights, and Top Rank were kind of like, whoa, 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 like, steady yourself. You've just had a pretty poor fight against Marcelino, is it pronounced Corsejes or whatever, the guy that fought Billy Joe Saunders, who pretty much dropped and beat Belanga, but because he was the B-side, they gave it to Belanga, and then he went, you know, 10 rounds with Steve Rolls, 10 rounds with Roma Alexis Angulo, 8 rounds with Damon Nicholson.
Right. Yeah. I think that's where they saw, like, okay, let's... Yeah. I mean, like you said, Top Rank is probably the best in the business as at development. You know, if that was the case and they felt that, like, hey, you know, we need to slow you down, we need to put you in with somebody more like this instead of, you know, somebody who's top 10 or top 5 or something, you know, they have the track record. They have the track record to prove it. And, you know, it just... I mean, Berlanga, I'm sure, got a pretty payday from Matchroom Boxing being undefeated, being a free agent. He met with Golden Boy. He met with
PBC.
Eddie Hearn in Matchroom. You know, I'm sure he met with PBC. You know, and his biggest thing was that he's been on TV and he's shown to draw decent crowds in New York City. You know. So, like, oh, okay, you know, he's marketable. It could work, you know? So I think he utilized that leverage. And also maybe he wanted the big fights, you know? So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I think, obviously, if Berlanga wins in terms of the marketability and the salesmanship of the sport of boxing, I think Berlanga is the guy in this fight. But we'll see. I'm telling you, I think Quigley has a way better shot than people think. I think Quigley, like you said, he can box, and Berlanga doesn't like boxers. So I'm sure Quigley and his team have been around a while where they have noticed that. So and Berlanga is obviously going to try to go for the knockout, assuming it's still the same Berlanga. But yeah, this is an intriguing fight. It really is. I'm intrigued to see this debut under the DAZN and Matchroom banner for Edgar Berlanga. So let's see if he walks out with another rapper or something like that. You never know. In the co-main event, Adam Kownacki, 20-3, goes up against Joe Cusumano, 21-4. Kownacki, you might remember, he was a PBC guy for a while. And then obviously that didn't continue. And now he's fighting under DAZN and Matchroom, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably just brought him on board because he sells tickets. Obviously, yeah. in that area, you've got...
Polish, right?
Yeah, a lot of Polish and a lot of, you know, Puerto Ricans that will come out to see Edgar Berlanga. This is really sort of a turning point, I would say, in Kownacki's career. He's lost the last three on the bounce. TKO loss to Robert Hellenius. Another TKO loss to Robert Hellenius. And then an unbelievable loss, in my opinion, to Ali Aaron Demrizian on the PBC card. I did not see him losing that, but he was pretty comfortably beaten by him on the night. So I'm hoping that Kownacki has gone away, kind of had a little think, had a little rest, and come back. It's been nearly a year since he's been in the ring, and he really needs to get himself back into the W's.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. But it's an intriguing card, a good weekend of boxing coming up. And also, news and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Subriel Matias will defend his IBF junior welterweight title against Sergey Lipinets on August 26th, according to ESPN. The Showtime fight location was not disclosed, so we don't know exactly where yet. But this is a pretty good matchup. I like this matchup, and I'm interested to see how that pans out. August is still 2 months away or so, so hopefully it happens. But Showtime, hey, you got to give it to Showtime and Espinoza, regardless of what people think. Like, I think when the whole Paramount merger happened and everything, I think Espinoza, the panic button was pushed, and he's trying as much as he can to put out as many cards as he can and to really, you know, in a way, for boxing fans, for the Showtime platform, the fact that Paramount and all the, you know, reported losses and, you know, maybe the Showtime's going to go away and all that stuff, it's good for the fans because it forces Espinoza and Showtime Boxing to make fights that people want to see because they need ratings, because the executives over there, that's what they care about, is the ratings. They, you know, they don't want to lose money on fights. So that's why Spence Crawford was made. That's why Crawford held out so long and got what he wanted, you know, in terms of like, he didn't want to do a multiple fight deal with Showtime. And reportedly he got, it's just a 2-fight deal, but the second fight would only be against Spence again if the rematch clause is activated on either side. So, yeah, I mean, Showtime is forced into a corner here. That's why they're making these fights. So, and then also probably the biggest news of the week, Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions filed a lawsuit against their own fighter, Ryan Garcia, and his attorney and advisor, one of his attorneys and advisors, I guess, Lupe Valencia, in the U.S. District Court of Nevada, to enforce its contract with the fighter. The lawsuit comes 1 week after Ryan Garcia's legal team sent Golden Boy Promotions a demand letter alleging violations of the promotional agreement, as well as California and federal law, then validated the contract. Is anybody surprised here? I think we all saw the writing on the wall. There's been people who's been saying for years that we know, that we won't name, but multiple people in the boxing world that have said that Ryan's personality is very dangerous and detrimental, that him and his family allegedly are problematic. We've been told this before. And then, I mean, how many times has he, I think it was twice, where he made a public, you know, public debacle of his contract with Golden Boy, that Golden Boy was enforced. Like, I mean, you got to give it to Ryan. He used his popularity that he got after getting signed with Golden Boy and being on Instagram and with all these influencers. He used that popularity leverage to put public pressure on Golden Boy to restructure his contract twice. And then he pulls out of fights, you know, for mental health issues. But then he posts pictures of him in Mexico a couple weeks later. You know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff that the kid, you know, it really looks bad for. But, and then when he hired Lupe Valencia, who has, I think a lot of people know in the boxing world, Lupe Valencia has been associated with a lot of PBC fighters, a lot of the PBC side of things in the boxing world. And I think he used to represent, or he used to help out Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And I believe Chavez Jr. in an interview had said that Valencia was like, I think he said it in Spanish, but he said something that Valencia was like a snake or something. You know, and it, I mean, Chavez Jr. is crazy too, but it, you know, and, but Valencia's been around, you know, he knows how to navigate the system and, you know, it works. I think he's represented Jesse Vargas as well. And he's represented a lot of guys. And I remember when that happened, when Ryan Garcia, hired Valencia, I remember thinking, I was like, oh no, I was like, this is definitely the beginning of the end, because, Valencia's a PBC guy, you know, and they were talking about, like, there's been a rumor online that, you know, they were talking about who the mole was in Ryan Garcia's camp, and people were saying it was Valencia, you know, his own guy. I mean, allegedly, we don't know. That's just the rumor we've been hearing. I honestly think that this lawsuit is, it, obviously, it's against Ryan Garcia, but Valencia is mentioned numerous times in it. I read through it, I think Golden Boy Promotions knows, like, hey, when they got that demand letter, this is reminiscent of the Mikey Garcia and Top Rank debacle from like 7-8 years ago. But in a sense, in that case, Mikey Garcia, no relation to Ryan Garcia, by the way, filed his lawsuit against Top Rank, saying that he had satisfied all the obligations of his contract. But I don't know, man, this isn't looking good. It's not looking good. I don't know what's gonna happen here. I think at the end of the day, Ryan is gonna leave, but reportedly, from what we read and what we've been told, that Golden Boy Promotions is contract with Ryan Garcia goes until, I believe, 2026. So if Ryan, you know, if Golden Boy Promotions wins this and Ryan doesn't want to, or this litigation goes on for a couple years like it did with Mike and Garcia in Top Rank, Ryan could be out of the ring for a while, right?
It's looking so. It's looking so. It's definitely going to be interesting, right? Because even if Golden Boy win, they've then got to know that they've got this upset fighter still in their ranks. And
right.
You know, it's kind of like, is it even worse still having him around? Is he just going to kick up a fuss and complain all the time? You know, or is he just going to take it on the chin like a man and just be like, you know what? Like, I wanted to leave. I've got to stay here. Hey, let's just get my fights done. And let's just get out of this contract and go to wherever else he wants to go. You know, he's just kind of, you know, silly for them guys to always be kind of like, you know, washing their laundry in public, right? You know, Oscar and him going back all the time on Twitter and stuff like that. Like, if he's got a problem with him, call him.
No, yeah. You know what, too? Like, I get it. You know, I Oscar De La Hoya, especially being the owner, CEO of Golden Boy Promotions, major promoter in boxing, I get it. He shouldn't have done that. But, I mean, it's not that I'm making a justification for it, but how many times do you think that Golden Boy has tried to talk to Ryan privately? And Ryan always goes back to social media because he knows, oh, well, it worked once or twice before. I'm going to do it again, you know, because people take my side. And I really think that's what pushed Oscar to be like, man, this kid just doesn't listen. We've tried to talk to him privately, and I'm sure they have. I mean, that's nature of business, right? Nature of anything in general, but especially business. And I think Ryan just kept digging his hole because he knew, like, oh, I'm just going to publicly complain online and cry online. And Oscar was just sick of it. I mean, you got to look at Oscar. Oscar is, he's Mexican-American, you know, Ryan's Mexican-American. Well, he's born in the United, they're both born in the United States, but Oscar De La Hoya is a different type of Latino than Ryan Garcia is. Right, Oscar De La Hoya grew up a lot differently than Ryan Garcia did, in terms of fighting and all that stuff. So everybody looks at stuff through the lenses that they had, and De La Hoya looks at fighting through the lenses that he had, how he went through the ranks, and that's how he looks at the fighters that he has in his stable. So I think that's also, you know, that also affects their relationship, and it just doesn't work out. But yeah, man, I don't, this is, the writing was on the wall. The writing was on the wall. But, and I think Golden Boy Promotions, as soon as they got that letter, that demand letter, they knew it. Like, okay, let's beat them to the punch, you know? Like, and, you know, I don't know. It's a total shit show, man. It really is. It's a total shit show. And you know, Ryan, he got a huge payday off the Davis fight. You know, see what happens there. Eddie Hearn has already shown interest in signing Ryan. Cause I mean, I'm sure DAZN also told Eddie Hearn, like, hey, let's try to keep him here, you know, like make a play for him. And I think I saw a screenshot of an email report, an alleged email that Eddie Hearn has sent to Ryan or something. I don't know. But, and Eddie Hearn has said in interviews that he wants to sign Ryan, but you also got to give it to the Showtime and PBC team. You know, whether it's a sneaky move or not, they've really added fuel to the fire between the relationship of Golden Boy and Ryan Garcia over the last year. Leonard Ellerby, Espinoza, all those PBC guys, they've added a ton of fuel to that fire, saying, oh, yeah, no, Ryan's a great guy. You know, but Golden Boy, he needs to get out of there. You know, like, yeah, you know, especially when Oscar De La Hoya wasn't at the press conference for the Davis fight. And then Ryan Garcia says in an interview after that, like, oh, yeah, you know, the PBC team or Davis's team treated me better than my own promotional team. You know, Espinoza and all those guys at Showtime PBC, they're smart. That's a smart mind game to play where it's like they're on his side, but you know, De La Hoya, PBC, they don't like each other. Heyman, De La Hoya, Bob Arum, nobody gets along here. Eddie Hearn, nobody gets along here. So they obviously want to see the other side disintegrate. That's just the nature of the game. It's unfortunate for the fans, but that's just the nature of the game. So they're all going to do what they can to add fuel to that fire. And it worked. The mind games have worked. The psychological warfare has worked. Because look at Ryan. He's, you know, complaining. You know, the lawsuit says that there's people in his ear, specifically naming Valencia, that are advising him of bad, you know, habits and behavior. And Valencia is directly, allegedly negotiating deals with promoters and networks and all that stuff for Ryan Garcia, where Golden Boy Promotions has to be involved. And, you know, yeah, it's a total shit show, man. It's a total shit show. And like you said, even if Golden Boy Promotions wins, you're going to have an upset fire with Ryan, who's just going to, you know, cry wolf all the time. Yeah, it's a crappy situation. But either way, they have him until 2026, and it could be a Mikey Garcia situation. But maybe that's why Ryan knew. He's like, let me get the biggest payday possible, which is the Davis fight, because I know I'm gonna try to get legal with Golden Boy, but I need to have money to sit on just in case I have to sit out of boxing for a couple of years, like Mikey Garcia did. Right? Think about it.
Yeah, 100%. The payday after pay per views and stuff for Ryan must have been huge. Somewhere between 10 to 20 million, I assume.
Oh, maybe
when you add in his purse plus the pay per view numbers on top, yeah, that's unless he goes crazy, that should be able to last him for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was smart, man. That's why he won. That's why he pushed for that fight so much. And then he would say before the fight, oh yeah, the rehydration clause, like, I agreed to it. I'm the man. I'm not gonna complain. I agreed to all that. And then after he loses, he complains about it. It's just like, oh okay, like, I don't know. It happens, man. It's boxing, and we've seen it before, and we're going to see it again. So, but once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round, episode 236. Don't forget to listen to our bonus episode, which was also uploaded concurrently with this. A flyweight, Christian Robles, 8-0 with 3 KOs, who fights this Saturday in New York City on DAZN on the undercard of Berlanga and Quigley. But as we round the finish line for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week, where we'll pretty much have to bring you a guest, because the start of July is pretty quiet.
Pretty quiet. Pretty quiet. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.